Blog Talk Radio.
Home of the stars, through the airwaves and on the big screen, coming to you live from Hollywood, it's Rated G Radio with your host, Garrett Miller.
I love that new opening. Thank you, Brian Pothier, for putting that together. We have a really cool show today. Thanks for joining us for an early Rated G Radio. We're going to have Victor Fan on the show in just a second, and he is going to be talking about his incredible journey into creating horror comic books and all of the stuff that is involved with that. But I want to give a big shout out today to Stuart Russell across the pond in the United Kingdom, who is listening in and has been helping me on some technical projects earlier throughout the day. It's nighttime his time, so a quick shout out before he heads off to bed. Hopefully he'll get some rest tonight. But without further ado, I want to welcome Victor to the show. Victor, this is your first time on the show, so welcome to Rated G Radio.
Thank you, Kurt. Thank you for having me.
I am so excited to have you here, and for everybody who listens to this show on a regular basis, whenever I have a guest on, I always try to do the 6 degrees of separation from Kevin Bacon, and so I'm going to back this up probably almost about a year, and I first met Victor when my next-door neighbors, Jeff and Jill, invited me to go to the OC Screenwriters meeting in Fountain Valley, which is near Huntington Beach, and I was very excited to go and meet everybody and see everybody that was going on. I knew Robert Rollins from Facebook, and Victor was one of the first people to come up and welcome and greet me and include me in the group, so to speak. And I've had the opportunity to see Victor on a couple of occasions at the meetings, and just wanted to publicly say thank you for being such a cool guy at those events. But then to find out that you are doing so much behind the scenes and are so talented, it just kind of blew me away, and I have been chomping at the bit to get you on the show for a long time, so I'm grateful that you've taken time out of your schedule today to come on and do a little visit with us. So thank you, Victor. Let's see, where to start? For everybody who doesn't know anything about you, you've got quite a fan base that's listening in today, Victor. Can you start out kind of like back in the beginning when you were growing up as a kid and what it was like and how you started to get involved in comic books, as kids often do?
Yeah, no problem. Well, thank you again for having me, Garrett. You know, it's been great meeting you in person. You're an awesome guy, and I love every time I get to hang out with you and we get to joke about Mark and Robert and all of our mutual friends, so thanks a lot for having me again. I'm from Long Beach originally, and Long Beach, Orange County, and I grew up in the 80s, and in the 80s, all the kids loved heavy metal, all the kids loved professional wrestling, all the kids loved horror movies, all the kids loved comic books. So I'm very much a kid of my era. And
From a kid of your era, though, what were some of your favorites that you liked to watch?
Let's see. I mean, my favorite horror movie series of all time is the Friday the 13th series.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you even have, like, nightmares or anything with that?
No, I mean, when I was watching them, I was a chicken when I watched them. Don't get me wrong. I'm not going to act like I'm tough. I used to actually hold a blanket in front of me. I mean, my family still makes fun of me to this day. And anytime the scary scenes would happen, I would cover my head because, you know, as a little kid, your blanket would be scary and monsters.
You saw the Friday the 13th series. Did that kind of spur other activities as a child? I mean, did that help your creativity as you started to read and get involved in comic books, or what happened with that?
A lot of people give horror movies, comics, all that stuff that we're into. Although a lot of people give those things a bad rap, but I think they have a lot of pro-social things that they teach you. Obviously, the Friday the 13th series or any real horror movie of that era, they were all cautionary tales. They're pro-social cautionary tales. So if you have premarital sex or smoke dope, Jason's going to get you, you know.
I never thought of it like that.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I have to ask you this because that is an astute observation. Were you able to make those revelations, if you were going to call it anything, at that age, or did that come about later on as you had grown up a little bit?
Oh, no. I mean, I've always been the weird kid that always noticed everything that's obvious, but not really. You know what I mean? So that's one of the things I noticed as a little kid.
And so When was it that you started to get involved in the comic book aspect of your youth? Because I want to ask you about professional wrestling next, but I'm going to save that for the next question.
Okay, no worries. I got into comic books very, very early. My father was an architect. You know, my parents were Vietnamese refugees. You know, they left Vietnam in the fall of Saigon in 76, and they came to America in boats, sinking boats, right, pushing, you know, dead bodies into the ocean. And they came to America, to have kids here and have, you know, give them a better life, you know. So my parents gave me everything they could. My father, he was a very artistic guy. He was a scrappy guy, too. He used to be a troublemaker like I was when I was a teenager. But, yeah. So Alpha doesn't fall too far from the tree, but he was a very artistic guy. And he came, you know, and he came here and, you know, he wanted to give the best life he could for his family. So he actually, with no money in his pocket, he put himself through Cal Poly Pomona and he became an architect. And
wow.
So even though he had that very steady Joe job, highly mathematical job, he was still a really artistic person. So he would come home every night and he would draw his own comics, and they looked professional, like Marvel quality. And what they were of all the ancient Asian mythology. Like he would do the story about the two dragons that have 50 girls and 50 boys, and that's how they create the human race. He did the monkey magic story about the monkey that rides the cloud that can shapeshift and stuff like that. So all those really ancient Asian mythologies he would do, and that's how I learned how to appreciate comic book art, how to learn how to draw, and then how I learned my whole Asian history, actually.
That is a great – you need to turn that into a movie. That's amazing.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
So, okay, so at this point, when your dad is sitting here drawing all of these fantastic stories and being such a fantastic artist, are you picking up the pen and paper at the same time, or is this just something you're appreciating as a child at this point?
At this point, I how it is. Every boy copies their dad. I mean, I'm sure every boy has the same story I have where, you know, you see your dad shaving, you go and take his shaving can and cut your face off. Like everybody copies dad, so I copied my father too. So I put out the paper and I started drawing, and that's how I got into comic books and how I got into drawing comic books.
I love that. And were you also writing stories at the same time, or were you just kind of like drawing pictures, or what's the evolution for you?
Definitely. A lot of people when they ask me what I am, what I do, because I'm sure I'm going to mention this later in the interview, I work across multiple industries. I work in the video game industry, movie industry, TV industry, comic book industry, novel industry. I work across five industries consistently, and people ask me, what do you do? And I tell them, I'm a writer-illustrator. And they always ask me, what do you like more? I'm like, well, to me, it's actually the same exact thing. There's no difference. For me as a writer, I'm doing the same thing as an illustrator. I'm telling a story. But as an illustrator, I do it for your eyes. As a writer, I'm telling a story for your mind's eye. So... yeah, as an artist, I drew to tell a story. Just like as a writer, I write to tell a story.
So let's kind of like speed things up here a little bit. So you grew up a little bit and decided that you wanted to go off to college. So did you have a lot of different places you wanted to go, or did you have it narrowed down by the time that you were getting ready to graduate high school?
Yeah, growing up in a lower economic environment, you know, Long Beach. And then, but by the time my father passed away when I was six, so I'm
on. Oh, I'm sorry.
It is what it is. Thank you. But my mother married a police officer, and he was really scared of me becoming a gang member because, you know, Long Beach, that's all there was. So so he made us go to school in Orange County because there were, you know, I'm not going to join a white gang, right? And there weren't that many white gangs.
Okay.
Right, and exactly. I'm not going to join a gang of some guy named Chad, right, or Blake.
Right, exactly.
So, exactly. So, going up to senior year, I knew that I wanted to, you know, pursue my 4-year degree. I actually got accepted to UCLA, but my twin sister, I have a twin, she got accepted to Cornell, which is Ivy League.
Wow.
So my mother, being a lower economic privilege, she only decided to choose, you know, send one kid to college. And I'm like, look, she got into Cornell. Let her go to college. I'll take care of myself.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I ended up – go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and where did you end up going?
Oh, I ended up going to Fullerton College for 2 years and then transferring to Cal State Fullerton to finish. But
nice,
I put myself through college from my own pocket.
Well, congratulations. That takes a lot of hard work, and anybody who, well, I don't, if you go to college and you're on a Fulbright scholarship, that's fantastic, but I'm really more impressed with people like yourself, Victor, who go and put the muscle in. You know, you have to put the money in, you have to put the time in, and then, you know, you also get out of there. But you didn't just stop with your bachelor degree, though. You went on to get a graduate degree, too, didn't you?
Yeah, I have a Master of Fine Arts, and I'm about to start my PhD, actually.
Oh, my God. Now my head hurts. So, can I ask you this? So, did you get finished with your bachelor's and then just race right into your master's program, or did you take some time off?
No, I took some time off. I'm actually really lucky. When I was going through my bachelor's program, my undergrad years, I was already working in the industry. But the day I graduated, I had two offers. The first offer was by HBO, and they're like, hey, Vic, you know, we're doing this new show with Dane Cook. You want to come along camera crew all summer? I'm like, awesome, I'll do it. Then I get a second phone call from my old professor, and she's like, hey, you know, we know you've been a pro for a while now. Our old screenwriting professor is retiring. You want to replace him? I'm like, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to assume you took the job as a professor?
I took both. I did that project with HBO, but it was only for summer. And when the fall came, I was a professor.
That is awesome. Now, I want to go back, though, because I understand you have some involvement in Vietnamese music videos. What in the world was going on with that?
Yeah. You know, my mom, she kept track of all my dad's friends from Cal Poly. And he had a friend who had become a director in Vietnam. Like, he was producing Vietnamese music videos, Vietnamese soap operas, Vietnamese, you know, concert shows. And when I told my mom, hey, I want to, you know, get into filmmaking, she's like, okay, well, you know, we should talk to an expert. So she called him up, and he came over, and he talked to me. He's like, yeah, I'm going to tell you right now, this is the hardest thing you could ever imagine doing. You're going to work your butt off and make zero money at all. You're going to be a food stamps, welfare, all that stuff. But if it's the only thing that can make you happy, then do it. And I told him, I'm like, look, this is the only thing that will make me happy. He's like, okay, cool. He's like, well, then I'm going to hire you as my assistant.
And so what did you do?
I ended up being his assistant. Every time he would go on a shoot, anytime shot in California anyway, not in Vietnam because at the time I didn't have a passport. But anytime shot in California, I would go along with him, and I would do all the grunt work. I was a PA. So I would hold the reflector. You know, I would do all the gopher stuff, that type of stuff. And that's how I got through my undergrad years.
That is cool. Now, okay, so if you listed any of the artists that you worked with while you were doing that, would there be any names that we'd recognize, or was all of the music that you'd work on, it would be kind of exported back over to Vietnam?
Yeah, it's, the artist is so obscure, and plus I can't even pronounce their names.
Okay, but you had a good time.
Yeah, it was a great learning experience, and it got my foot in the door, and that's the most important part.
There you go. So, okay, when you went to college, Victor, you ended up having an internship that lets you start doing some different work that I think kind of helped open the doors a little bit for your drawings and things like that. Can you talk to us a little bit about what you were doing as an intern?
Yeah, definitely. So my senior year, every college, you know, they make you do an internship your senior year to graduate. And during my senior year, I got an internship with Mark Wheeler Management. They're still around. They're still pretty big. We got some Transformers.
And Victor, I'm losing you just a tiny little bit here.
I'm sorry.
There we go.
Can you hear me now?
Yep, you're great.
Okay, great. I'm sorry about that. So
no
worries. Senior, I got an internship with Mark Wheeler Management, and Mark had a partner named Ben Katz, and Ben was a producer making low-budget, you know, horror films, independent films, excuse me, what have you. And during one of the meetings, at first I did the normal internship work, which is you write coverage. You read a screenplay, you write coverage on whether the screenplay was good or bad. And then we would meet for lunch pretty often, and one of the days meeting for lunch, you know, I got there really early because I was driving up from Fullerton. So I left 2 hours before. There was no traffic, so I got there an hour and a half before the meeting.
Oh, my gosh.
I had nothing to do, so I would just sketch on the napkins. And, yeah, keep in mind, I've been drawing my entire life. So by then, you know, every sketch I make is professional quality. And Ben shows up to the meeting, and he sits down, and he's like, who drew these? I'm like, I did. He's like, you're really effing good. I'm like, thanks, man. He's like, have you thought about being a storyboard artist? And I'm like, no. He's like, look, I'm going to do a movie in Thailand. I want you to be my storyboard artist. And I was hired right then and there on the spot.
That is cool. And so what's involved in being a storyboarding person?
Okay, most storyboard art is pretty much a comic book of the movie before they shoot the movie. And the movies that usually need it are movies that have a lot of action or a lot of special effects, because you're going to have at least 1,000 artists, like compositors, CGI artists, trying to get on the same page. And you need somebody to actually come in, someone like me to come in with the director and plan out all the shots ahead of time so that you don't waste money.
Oh. And yeah. So pretty much everything that you drew, that ended up becoming actually, you know, a shot in the film, or at least, you know, somebody filmed it at some point.
Yeah. I just went to a premiere of one of the movies I storyboarded last month, and at the Crescent West Side, and it was hilarious because I brought my friend with me, and I showed her all the drawings beforehand, and then when we were watching the movie, they were all there. They were totally
wow.
on the screen.
So how does that make you feel as an artist to see something that you've spent so much time and energy and love putting down on paper actually up on film?
It's the feeling is I can't even put it into words. Just seeing what you create being breathed into the life of actual actors, I mean, I can't even, there's no word for it.
So, I mean, well, and you must be really absolutely brilliant in order to do this, because they're just thinking to hire somebody like me who can maybe draw, you know, one of the cartoons in the back of a TV guide to get into an art school. You know, you have to really know your stuff. So when you're doing these drawings and renderings and things like this, are you doing them just strictly in black and white? Or are you doing them in full color? How does it work?
I do them whatever the client needs. Usually for storyboard stuff for movies, they prefer it in black and white because they just want it done and fast. So I do it all in pencil, and I bang out the whole movie or the scene that they need me to do, and then the director gives me notes, and I do it again.
Wow.
But if you do concept art, which is the stuff I do for video games, that's the stuff where I do in full color, where, like, I'm actually painting a canvas the size of a wall, you know.
And so how much time does that actually take you from the time that you're given the, you know, here's your notes or here's your whatever until you're done? I'm sure the answer ranges depending upon what you're doing, but typically, what's it take?
I'm one of the fastest guys there is. I've been able to do an entire movie in a month.
Wow.
I'm saying from page one of the screenplay to page 100, all drawn, every shot.
And so how many pictures does that end up creating for you? I mean, is it, well, I don't know. So what do you have to do? How many pieces of art do you come up with?
It's in the high thousands range.
Really?
I'm talking like 4,000, 5,000 shots.
So are you doing this pretty much like in your sleep so you don't sleep for a month to get it done, or what's it like for you when you're going through that process?
I have a really strange gift and curse. I've always had insomnia my entire life. So my entire life I've been able to function perfectly with only 2 or 4 hours of sleep. And it's been my biggest advantage too.
Okay, you have 2 to 4 hours. Is it 2 to 4 hours of good sleep, or just 2 to 4 hours of kind of sleep?
Two to four hours of good sleep, and then like there's the hour of bad sleep of me trying to get into good sleep. You know, where I'm just staring at the ceiling.
Oh my gosh, you poor guy. That's horrible. So okay, so you had a storyboarding job. When did you start working on Torture Chamber Productions?
Oh, that's interesting story. All right, so you know, I got a payday from storyboarding, and I actually used that money. I made a friend when I was doing my undergrad named Ryan Ahmet, who's still my partner to this day. So we've been together for about 10 years, but we became friends in undergrad because we were the only two students at Cal State Fullerton who listened to heavy metal.
How is that possible?
I don't know, but during the time, it was early 2000s, everybody was listening to that indie skinny jeans crap.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well,
yeah,
there you go.
To, like, Chemical Romance and, you know, Fall Out Boy and all those stuff I wouldn't be caught with. If, you know, you can't pay me to listen to that stuff. And so Ryan and I was walking to class wearing my Slayer shirt. He was walking to class wearing his Judas Priest shirt. We looked at each other like, we should be friends right now. So at the time, Ryan was a... Yeah, we became great friends because we have opposite brains. Like, I'm very social. He's the least social person I've ever met in my entire life. I'm a go-getter. He's just naturally good at things. You know, I have to work at things for me to be good. He's just a natural. But at the time, he was studying business. So it was perfect because, you know, with my my outgoing personality and my undying work ethic with his business skills, we would make the perfect union.
And so that's what you guys did. So you formed Torture Chamber Productions, and the mind goes a million miles an hour on all the things that could be involved in that. What is that company?
Okay, it's our company. It's a production company, and this is what we use to make our horror films. So the way it works is Ryan and I we own it together, and you know we find properties like you've met Mark Sevi. Like we try to produce his property. So we get a writer like Mark Sevi who has, you know, 20 plus something B movie credits, and we go, we love this property, let us option it from you, and we find a financer, and then he gives us the money, we shoot the movie, we get it to our distributor, and then the rest is history.
How do you find people to?
Our senior year of college, by the way.
okay. So how did you figure it out?
The way I figured it out is by watching, you know, when I was working for Ben Cass, the producer I was telling you about, who gave me my first shot, I was working closely with him, like, in the same room every effing day, and he was a high-level producer, and I literally just learned by watching him, and that's how I learned how to become a producer myself.
And so where do you find these people with, like, all these million-dollar bank accounts that just can't wait to give you money?
Something I've learned very early is that if your product is good, the funding will come. Like, if your product is just top of the shelf, great, the funding will eventually come. So if you really believe in it, then those people will find you.
So how do you get to a point where you really believe in the product that you're producing then?
Well, I mean, I write my own material. That's one of the ways. And, I have to love my own stuff. But, I search out guys like Mark Sevi, like guys like that who – You know, Mark is, I can't, you know, stop saying good words about Mark, but Mark is something else. You know, he's a lifetime of wanting to be the best. And because he spent his entire life wanting to be the best, it shows up in his work. And that is material I believe in. And I'll put my reputation on.
And so when you get to that point, I guess the question that I just want to kind of beat up a little bit is, you know, how you said you've got a good product and, you know, you really believe in it and this is all exciting. You know, the people will kind of find you. How do the people find you? Do they just know? I mean, do they know you from school? Do they know you from your internship? How do these money magnets just come to you?
Many, many different ways. Again, this is more my side of the coin, the Ryan side of the coin.
Sure.
I'm really social. I'm really, really social. I'm in LA all the time. Like I meet like people like you wouldn't believe. Like I have a Rolodex big enough to choke a horse with, and yeah.
You
and
need that.
Believe in these, yes. And because you have to believe in these products and stuff like that. I can't stop talking about the things I'm working on and stuff. And it becomes like a virus. I infect someone else, and they're like, you know, I know someone you should talk to who's been looking for a project like this to invest in, you know, and boom, there it is.
There you go. So what are you doing now? I want to get back to the comic books and stuff and talk about the things that you've written, but what are you doing right now with college? Because I think, didn't you just restart a new semester?
I'm on winter break right now. So
you're
actually
in winter break now.
Right before I called you, I'm redoing all my lectures for next semester. Every break I have, I make sure I go through all my lectures and make sure they're current. I make sure I read the trades every morning in the industry, and if any of my lectures even one day behind, I update it.
Wow.
On what's happening in the industry. Yeah.
Your students are actually very lucky to have you as a professor. I know that you know, back in the day, that was certainly not the case going to school when I was going to Arizona State. So what does a typical class for you entail? I mean, do you teach just one subject, or are you teaching multiple subjects in the same genre? What are you doing?
I teach many subjects. I teach basic and intermediate screenwriting. Those are my go-tos. I teach American cinema, which is the history of American film. I teach contemporary cinema, which is American film now. I teach media aesthetics, which is how do you make it look. And I teach story structure at Cal State Fullerton, so how to tell a story. So I teach a whole wide range of filmmaking classes.
So I'm going to ask a really selfish question here. Is there a way for somebody just to come and, like, you know, if I wanted to take one of your classes just for Joe Schmo like me to do that, or do you have to, like, you know, be a real student and go through the whole process?
Yeah. You know, the foreign college where the primary school I teach at, it's public school. I mean, anybody could register anytime they want.
Okay, cool. And so what kind of assignments do you give out to students these days when you're going to be teaching this? Do you make them, like, write a screenplay during the semester, or what does that work out to be?
I have a very specific theory with teaching, and this is my theory is this. Look, if I've never made money at doing something, I'm not going to teach you how to do that. So what I teach my kids is everything I've made money at. So, like, I'll teach them how to write a treatment because I've been paid to write treatments in the past. I'll teach them how to write short screenplays because I've been paid to write short screenplays. I'll teach them how to write one-hour dramas because I've been paid to write one-hour dramas. So anything I've been paid to do by the industry, that's exactly what I teach my students.
I love that. Okay, so I want to be one of your students. Oh, my gosh. Okay, so let's get back and talk
that.
About
That'll
your comic
fun.
Books.
But yeah, no problem.
I might be your problem child. I don't know. You say that now, Victor, until I get into your class. So let's go back and talk about your comics, because you've got a ton of stuff that's out there on Amazon. And for anybody who's listening to the show today, I always say please support the cause. So if you're listening to Victor's interview and you find him interesting and engaging, there's a link at the bottom of the show page, and it says if you want to buy Victor's comics books on Amazon, click here. There's a whole bunch of things that he's got published, and you can go and get them today. And I'm going to encourage you to do so. But getting back to Victor here, Victor, what was your first comic book that you wrote? If that's a good place to even start, maybe there's a different place that, you know, we should talk about where you started out. But what was the first comic book that you wrote, and why did you choose to do it, and how did that come about?
Well, we're talking like when I was 6 years old here.
oh, my gosh.
It goes all the way back there. But, like, you know, I can't really remember that far, but I remember, you know, I wanted to do it, and I did it.
What was the story about? What were, like, your characters, you know, at that age? How do you develop something from beginning to end at six?
I remember, you know, and everybody, when you're new at something, all the newbies, you always copy the greats, right?
Sure.
So I remember my favorite artist back then was Tom McFarlane. And created Spawn. Yeah. So I just copied what he did. So he did dark superheroes. So I just made my own dark superhero. And then, like, when I was that young, too, I forced myself to memorize the Bible. So I would use superheroes who are, you know, reflective of the Bible and the quotes I learned within the Bible, and they'll fight against villains that were against that. So, and
oh,
I would use exact quotes from the Bible.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
Oh. I love that. That sounds terrific. So if we were to go to Amazon today to get to something that might be on there that people would go to see, what might be one or two of the comic books that you're most proud of?
There's a whole series of comics on there that you could look up. They're called Torture Chamber Presents, and it's pretty much my version of Twilight Zone. It's more perverted than Twilight Zone, nonetheless, but it's my version of, you know, me telling anthology horror stories of what I think of the world we live in.
So is there a particular episode or issue or edition that you wrote that you're most proud of?
Yeah, there's one called Something Is Wrong. And the way that I end up writing the story, it was actually a class assignment in my basic screenwriting class, the one that I actually teach now. And I still make these students write this assignment. But it was a class writing assignment where the stipulations is you can only write in Chicago, you can only write in 1963, and you can't tell flashback. You can only write four characters, and you have to tell linearly. Go. So I actually wrote that story and did it to the best of my ability, and it was actually really, really scary. And it was an allegory for how parents know, like, you know, parents don't really listen to their kids, who'd be like, hey, dad, I don't want to play football. I want to play baseball. And the dad's like, whatever, you're playing football, right? So it's my allegory on that. So, but the story's about a kid saying, hey, there's a serial killer out my window, and the parents don't listen to him until it's too late.
Oh, my gosh. And what's that called again?
It's called Something Is Wrong.
Oh, my God. Okay, so that's something you'd have to go see. So are you I would imagine that you probably kind of have a busy schedule, even if you only sleep 2 to 4 hours a night. Are you working on lots of other projects like that now, or are you just kind of ramping up for school? What's kind of happening in your typical day?
I still do, you know, I wake up in the morning, I work out first thing, and then I do all the other stuff. I'm working on my school stuff, but I also still do my creative projects. I'm finishing up one short story that I think is going to be my last short story, to tell you the truth. I think after this, when I retire from short stories, I'm only going to write novels.
Why?
But because I don't know. I think I've done everything I can with short stories. So, but you know, never say never. Stephen King said
never said right.
Years ago,
absolutely.
Right, and he still writes short stories. But as I'm saying, but it's called The Devil's Tool Up, and it's, you know, I wrote it in a really vulnerable place many years ago, and I just shelved it because I was so vulnerable. I didn't want to look at it. Right.
Oh,
and then
my gosh,
last year I pulled it out, and I'm like, you know, this is an effing good story. So I put some, you know, I rewrote it from scratch, and I used that biblical knowledge I told you about that, you know, I put it from memory. I used that to write the story, and I think I'm going to finish that one up, and that'll be my last one for last short story. But then I have to finish up a novel, too. I got commissioned to write a horror novel that I need to finish, too.
And what's that one about?
Oh, that one's called Haunted Union. It's I wrote a screenplay back in my graduate school years. I wrote a screenplay about you know how every culture has their version of the boogeyman, right? Like,
sure.
You know, if you're American, it's the boogeyman or it's Bloody Mary, right? Or prophecy, right? If you're Latino, you have El Cucuy, you have La Llorona, right? So you know, being a child of Vietnamese immigrants, I always thought, hey, you know, they told me really good scary stories about this ghost, this monster called Mad Lai. How come no one's ever done anything about it? So I did. I wrote a screenplay called Haunted Union about this monster. And I'll tell you a little bit about it. It's called Mad Lai, and that literally translates to half ghost or half demon. And what it is that this beautiful Asian girl, and you know, you're a white guy, so you probably like those, but it's this beautiful Asian girl, right?
Asian girls rock, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. And what she does is, you know, she'll go in the village, and then she's so gorgeous that somebody will fall in love with her. And that someone who falls in love with her becomes like her host, right? He takes her home, he pays all the bills, he makes some money, and she lives at home, and that's all she does. But what he doesn't know is that every night she's actually tranquilizing him when she's making dinner, so that at night he'll knock out and just fall asleep and can't wake up. Like, you can stick a needle in him and he'll still be asleep. And in the middle of the night, the reason why she's doing that is because every night she sits up in bed once he falls asleep, and her head snaps off her body and it flies off her body. Yeah, her head breaks off her body and flies out off her body, takes the spinal cord, takes all the organs with it, and she'll fly around the village looking for children to eat.
So oh, my gosh.
Story, yeah, my story, Haunted Union, is about an American Vietnamese guy like me, right, who grew up in Westminster, little Saigon, but he's completely Americanized, so he doesn't know anything about this legend, and he ends up in an arranged marriage with one of these things, and he brings her to America.
Oh, my gosh. How crazy is that? And the hilarity ensues, so, as they say, right?
Yeah, horror ensues, right? Yeah, exactly. So I got to finish the novel. I'm on the third draft right now, and my agent's actually bugging me about it, so I should probably finish it.
Very good. Hey, I've got two more questions for you, and then I'm going to ask you some follow-up at the end here. Doing my reading for you, what is becoming a master of horror, and what does that mean?
So, you know, in literature, there's been three masters of horror. There's been Edgar Allan Poe, there's been H.P. Lovecraft, and there's Stephen King. So there are these great writers who took a genre, right, a genre that people look down upon and think it has nothing to give society, and they use it to give something to society, right? They do something with it that no one's ever done with it before, and
okay.
It becomes, like, immortalized because of them. And that's exactly what I want to do. I want to take this genre that I love so much, and I want to do something that no one's ever done with it before and have it live on forever.
Can you share maybe an idea or two of what you're going to do that's going to change the world and have you become the fourth master of horror?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, no problem. Something we learn about in undergrad is that the really great filmmakers, great artists, whatever, right, Salvador Dali, what have you, Alfred Hitchcock, they're so good and they're so original at what they do that it's sort of like they made up their own genre, right? Like, if you watch Alfred Hitchcock movies, you could say they're psychological thrillers, you could say they're suspense thrillers, what have you, but more than anything, they're Alfred Hitchcock movies. It's almost like they're their own genre.
Sure.
Yeah, so that's what I'm trying to do. If you actually, you know, when you read my horror stories, they're a lot different than everybody else's. You know, they're not the standard slashers where, you know, horny teenagers end up at the campsite and they start having sex, the premarital sex and using drugs, and then they're killed killed off one by one while they're having sex or taking showers for too long. That's not what I do. I have my own specific type of horror, and if I had to call anything, I would call it social horror. Because what I do is I do what Isaac Asimov did with sci-fi, or those other great sci-fi writers. I use horror to talk about something about in the world that really bothers me.
Okay, and so here's my last regular question for you today, and this is probably going to tie in on how you have really constructed your entire career about horror, the horror genre. In college, you took a class on abnormal psychology. Did you? Was that just out of blind luck, or did you pick that for a specific reason, and how did it shape your development as a writer?
It wasn't blind luck. Everything I do is planned. And, I thought, you know, here I am. I want to write these horrible stories, these really serious stories. And I felt the best way to give validity to my stories if I really understood the disorders that my characters would have, right? And again, if you watch the slasher movies, yeah, they're awesome, they're fun to watch and stuff like that, but they're not really realistic, right? Because the slasher just, yeah, they're not acting like real people. They're acting like monsters, but not acting like real people. But if you ask me, real people are scarier than monsters any day of the week. So I took a bunch of abnormal psychology classes, and I really learned how real people with these type of disorders tick, and that's why I used to write my characters.
I love that. Okay, as we're wrapping up our time together, Victor, because I know you've got other things. You've sliced out 30 minutes of your time for us today. I'm grateful to you for that. Number one,
you.
Do you have any people you'd like to give shout-outs to?
Definitely. Definitely my friends and family. You guys have been with me since the beginning, and you continue to stay with me, so thank you for everything. My beautiful wife, Jeanette, my beautiful daughter, Shay. I love you guys both. You know, without you guys, life wouldn't be worth living, and I have to give props to all my agents. So thank you very much, Kelly Lamar, my creative agent. You've been with me since the beginning, and you continue to stay with me no matter what. I have to give huge props to my business agent, Seth Cooper. You've been giving me a lot of jobs. Thank you for the job at IMAX. Thank you for the job at Riot Games. I appreciate everything you do for me. And I have to give props to my sales agents, Jeff Blackflynn and Jeff Porter. Thank you for selling everything I make, guys. Without you, you know, I wouldn't be able to support my wife. I wouldn't be able to support my child. So I thank you two guys for everything you do.
And then my last question is for anybody who's listening, whether they're 6 or 60 or 600 years old, what would you give as advice for somebody who is wanting to do something like what you are doing? And maybe do you have like two or three tips you could give them as well?
I have one gigantic tip, and that is to always live life, like live life to its fullest. The worst thing you could ever do as an artist or as a writer or whatever the heck you are is cut yourself off from the world and just create. Because that's not what art's about. Art's about life. So the best thing you can do is go out there and live a life. Do stupid things. Do things you're going to regret, right? You know, just go out there, have fun. Have as much fun as you can every day, because that's where all this great art's going to come from. And it needs to be there, because if it's not there, it's not going to be real. And if it's not real, nobody wants it.
There we go. Great advice. Victor Fan, thank you very, very much for being on the show. I can't wait to see you at the next OC Screenwriters event. And in the meantime, everybody else, stay on the line. We'll be back after this by heart. Nothing at all. Victor, hang on.
Thank you.
I pressed the wrong button. Here we go. There we go.
Then you raise the sun.
That was Anna Grease with Ready to Fly. She was a listener who was on the show a couple of years ago, and actually, I think it was her mom who says, Anna's got this song, and I said, send it on over, I'll play it. And everybody went nuts over it. So it's Anna Grease, and it's Ready to Fly. So thanks to Victor Fan for being on the show earlier today. You know, the one question I meant to ask him, gosh darn it, I wanted to ask him about this whole Sony Pictures thing that's going on right now, because it is just absolutely crazy. I said from the first time that I heard about this quote-unquote leak by North Korea, I said this is an inside job by somebody at Sony, and they're just doing this to either make money or somebody's pissed off. Who knows? It's going to be coming out, I'm sure, in the next couple of weeks about what's really going on. Those poor North Koreans probably didn't have anything to do with this whatsoever. But since that was the butt of the joke in the movie, who knows? Anyway, they're probably laughing all the way to the bank right now, at least partially to help recover some of the quote-unquote losses that they've stemmed. They've got about $31.1 million in box office sales from that James Franco movie. So interesting to see how that's all going to play out. Let me give you some box office results, since we're talking to Victor and we're talking about screenplays and movies and things like that. So if you haven't heard, there's this movie out called The Hobbit, and apparently it's been doing quite well over the last couple of weeks. It's only been on the market for, 3 weeks. It did a paltry $21.7 million this week, down 47% from the week before. But in 3 weeks, they've only taken in $221 million. So I don't know if they're going to be able to make a profit on that or not. Number two was Into the Woods. So everybody says this Into the Woods, they either love it or hate it because of, if you are going to have Meryl Streep do this, it's not the same as having so-and-so, Bernadette Peters from Broadway do it, and then they've cut out some of the songs and this and that. Here's the deal, folks. If you've ever read a book, the movie is never as good as the book. If you've ever gone to a Broadway play and then seen a movie, it's never the same as the book, and the book is never the same as the play, and then so you have to like it for what it is, or not, I suppose. But if you're going to make comparisons against books or Broadway or things like that, I think this is kind of doesn't help the cause, because you're trying to compare an apple to a watermelon. One's a lot bigger than the other. So Into the Woods was number two, and for the second straight week, it was $18.8 million, down 40%, with a two-week total of $91 million, so it's done quite well. Unbroken, number three, at 18.1, with a two-week total of 87.6. Unbroken, I'm hearing, is going to get Angelina Jolie her first director's nod as best director for an Oscar. I've got Eric here. Eric, what are you doing? Do you want to come here? So good. Eric the Mighty Chihuahua is having an asthma attack, so he wants to come up and sit in my lap for the rest of the show. There we go. But she's going to be getting a nod for best director. I think that will be really fun to see her go up and actually win that. I would love to see, I don't say a woman, but I'd love to see somebody like Angelina win and just kind of, create a different standard in movie making for the industry that we love to go watch. Number four in its opening week, The Woman in Black 2, Angel of Death. Did you see the first Woman in Black? I didn't, but this one was in at $15 million on a per average screen of $2,602, which is kind of cool. Number four, Night at the Museum, Secret of the Tomb, down one spot to number five at 14.5 in a three-week total of $90 million. And in sixth place, I'm going to do the top ten here. Sixth place is Annie, down one spot. They were at 11.2 for a three-week total of 72.5. If you saw that, I would love to have you call in at 323-657-1493 today, tomorrow, sometime, and give me your opinion on the remake there. Number seven, The Imitation Game, up one spot. $7.8 million for a six-week total of $30.472 million. Don't know much about that, but I'd like to see it. And number eight, down two spots, The Hunger Games. $7.6 million for a seven-week total of $324 million. That's always cool. The Gambler is number nine, and then Big Hero 6 is number 10. So there we go. That's your top 10 movies for the week. Let me see here. What do we got going on for the rest of the week? Tomorrow on Rated G Radio for Thursday show, we've got Dr. Daryl Scriven. He's going to be coming on to talk about student loan debt and why it's such a detriment to our society. And then Friday, we've got Kelly Zerbis with Kelly's Lot. She is returning to the show for a Friday night dance party. We're going to be featuring her Live from Brussels album. that she recorded a while back, but she went on tour in Europe this past summer to promote the album and got rave reviews everywhere she went. So we're going to play that and also have that broadcast on our partners across the pond with West Star Radio Network and Chat and Spin Radio Network. And I've got another network that I'm talking to right now to broadcast in the UK as well. So who knows, maybe this time next year I'll be sitting across the pond in a mountain of snow and freezing temperatures to talk to you about what's going on in the world today. But those are the shows coming up. We've got the entire month of January booked with fantastic guests, some old, some new. Next week we're going to have Carrie Ann Dean. She's an author about, she writes kids' books, but they have to do with pets, and she's going to be talking about a fundraiser or an awareness campaign that she has to get kids to write letters about their animals and what they mean to them. Wednesday next week, we've got Lisa Tanker-Potts. She is she's called the glam girl of fitness, and she's going to come on and talk about fitness and lifestyle expectations and empowering women. And I think we're going to see a month of empowering women for the rest of January, which I'm thrilled to showcase and bring up to you. So with that, I'm going to play one more song. We'll come up and finish out the program. Have a good afternoon. Hold on.
on the horizon, bright light into sight, tight camera zoom on the impending doom. But then like boom, black suits fill the room up with the quickness, talk with the witnesses, hypnotizer, normalizer, vivid memories turn to fantasies. Ain't no MIBs, can I please do what we say, that's the way we kick it, yeah I mean? Or see my noisy cricket get wicked on you. We're your first, last, and only line of defense against the worst scum of the universe. So don't fear us, cheer us, if you ever get near us, don't jeer us. We're fearless, MIBs, freezing up all the flag.
What that stand for?
Men in black, and let me see you just bounce it with me, just bounce with me, just bounce it with me. Come on, let me see you just slide with me, just slide with me, just slide with me. Come on, let me see you take a walk with me, just walk it with me, take a walk with me. Come on, and make your neck work. Now freeze. For your own protection, cause we see things that you need not see, and we be places that you need not be. So go with your life, forget the Roswell crap, show love to the black suit, cause that's the men in, that's the men in.
Thanks to Victor Fan for coming on the show today and talking about horror comics and all of the crazy stuff that go on in creating that. And what a brilliant professor is to care so much about his students that he's updating his lectures and his material daily practically for his students. I'll tell you what, that goes a long way in my book, and I hope that you go buy some of Victor's comic books on Amazon today. There's a link at the bottom of the show page you can click on right there. And it's always fantastic to have fresh new talent like Victor on the show. He's been doing it for a while, but to the listeners today, I hope that you've enjoyed that, and if it inspires you to go out and do something that is fun and creative for you, I will highly encourage you to do that. And again, tomorrow, live at the quote-unquote regular time for Rated G Radio, Dr. Daryl Scriven will be on the show talking about student loan debt. It is my pleasure to do this show with and for you every day. I encourage you to go to the Rated G Radio Facebook fan page and take the very easy 10-question survey. It will help me make sure I'm providing you radio that you crave to listen to. That is my goal for 2015. And with that, we will see you live tomorrow night. Enjoy the rest of your day.
You've been listening to Rated G Radio.